I'm Martin Wilson, and this is The Next Turn, powered by ProTurn.io. The Next Turn is the home of conversations about skiing, ski racing, and sport. So thank you for joining us in the pursuit of better, to be better athletes, better coaches, better parents, and better fans. This week, a conversation with Michelle Jacine. Welcome back to The Next Turn. It's good to have you here. As always, it is good to have Jeff Vibert and Kara Williams by my side. Jeff, how you doing, man?
Hey, Martin. Feeling a lot better, thanks. Hey, Kara. Hey, listen, guys. How about Michaela?
83. Just this morning, hot off the presses.
Crazy.
Everybody's waiting to just watch it. right? 83, big deal. Kara, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. And I got to say, I'm still a little bit misty-eyed over watching Beat Feuz, who skied his last World Cup race this weekend. What an incredible career he had. Still hoping we talk to him one day. But yeah, I just love that guy.
You better get your German ready. He ain't speaking English to us, I'll tell you that.
Does he not?
Kitzbühel. No, he won't speak English. Kitzbühel was incredible, not only for Beat, but for Kilda, that near-death experience. It's just such a badass track. And the camera angles that the Austrians put together, and like, say what you want about the Austrians, they know how to show a ski race on TV. So that's pretty awesome. This week, we have an incredible conversation with one of my favorites. She comes back to revisit us, Michelle Jacine from Switzerland. She was actually, you know, Jeff might be a little upset about this, but one of the reasons we started this podcast, and we'll talk about that. Jeff, I'm sure you want to say something about that, don't you?
I don't want to say anything about that, Martin. I just think it's great that we had this opportunity to start this podcast and that she was kind of the impetus for it. So,
yeah, we got on this call earlier and the first thing that Jeff does was, I thought I was the reason you started this podcast. Right up in my grill.
Sorry, that is so not fair.
Anyways, our conversation with Michelle Jacine, really incredible to have her back. Jeff, why don't you do the business? Give us the hard facts on Miss Jacine.
All right, guys, here we go. Michelle Jacine, born December 5th, 1993 in Graubünden, Switzerland, made her World Cup debut in 2013. Michelle skis in all disciplines and has 218 World Cup starts with 19 World Cup podiums, including her first win in the slalom and simmering in 2020. She's competed in three Olympic Games, winning the gold medal in the combined in 2018, then repeating that feat again in 2022 in Beijing, also adding the bronze in the Super G. After after a very strong 2022 World Cup season with five podiums, Michelle has been struggling to find her groove in 2023.
Kara, if those are the hard facts, what's the story on Michelle and this interview?
Well, clearly, Michelle's been a busy girl since making her World Cup debut at the age of 19. As you said, Jeff, she's a rare four-event skier, which is pretty incredible considering the logistics of scheduling and training, traveling, equipment, coaching. She won back-to-back gold medals in the Alpine combined event at the last two Olympics. She's won medals in the World Championships, and she has World Cup podiums in every discipline. But as you said, Jeff, we are at the midway point of this World Cup season. And to date, Michelle hasn't produced results that we're used to seeing from her. But she's very forthcoming in this interview about her struggles. She sheds light on what she's been going through health-wise. And I'm going to keep this kind of short because I can't tell her story as well as she can. But here are a few other highlights. She talks about motivation, how it was hard to find after a win, her back-to-back gold. She talks about negative press and why she feels that a podcast like The Next Turn is a good outlet for her versus the one or two sound bites that athletes often get with a quick after race TV interview. And she also speaks to climate change and how the World Cup schedule might actually be adding to the climate crisis. And I'm so glad that she's entrusted us once again. I hope our listeners enjoy this fascinating interview once again with Michelle Jacine.
Thank you for that. Folks, you have the hard facts from Jeff. You've got the story from Kara. And now I will share our wonderful conversation with one of my favorites, our good friend, Michelle Jacine, here on The Next Turn.
Hi, Martin.
Michelle, how are you?
I'm good. Can you hear me? Does it all work?
I can hear you. It's all good. Hey, I really appreciate you doing this with where we are in the season, but I think I'm really happy we get to check in. We're trying to go back to some of the guests that we've had before and check in and see how they're doing. We just had Ryan Cochran-Siegel back, and seen where he's awesome. Come in the last couple of years. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see where you are. And if I'm really honest, I'm really kind of grateful that you're doing this when things aren't going as perfectly as you'd like them to.
Yeah, it's usually much more really, interesting.
Well, I think it's a rare moment of humanity in incredible athletes. So I think you're great for doing this. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I'm actually excited.
So grateful for you because you're the reason I have a podcast. Hand to God. Conversation that we had in Sauce Bay with the kids made me realize that these kind of conversations were great for so many reasons. So thank you.
No way. I didn't know that.
Yeah. The hand of God.
It's an honor.
Wow, I love that. Anyways.
That's really cool.
So we'll get into it. A lot's happened since we spoke. You've got another Olympic gold medal in the same event. How ridiculous is that?
It is ridiculous. It was, it was absolutely crazy. This week, these two and a half, three weeks in Beijing were insane. I don't know. It was such an emotional roller coaster leading up to maybe one of the most emotionally exhausting days of my life but I didn't even realize it. I still think I didn't realize it until now because it's nothing you really think of or nothing you ever dream of, because if you think, okay, one day I'll be at the Olympics, and then maybe you start to dream one day I'll get a medal, and then you win this thing. And then 4 years later, you get back there with the most extraordinary preparation ever. So nothing coming into that Olympic season. And then there was the GS where I kind of, I just didn't believe in it after first run. And then I saw Lara get a medal, Lara Gupperami winning a medal, even though she was just a couple hundreds in front of me after first run. And I was so angry with myself for not believing in myself for the second run, you know, to have a chance for the medal still. And then in slalom, I gave all my heart, and it was just so difficult with the second run, falling from second place back to sixth, because it was one of the most difficult slalom tracks all season long. And with no training, it's just very difficult to keep up with the fastest girls. So I kind of had to accept that, but it hurt so much. And then, the Super G, I just skied with joy and freedom. I really felt extremely free and excited for that race. And then I got third, and it was just so crazy, and I was just crying because in summer when I had mononucleosis, I watched the Tokyo Olympics, and I thought, oh, if I only will be okay again, and then I'm there and I win this medal, and it was just overwhelming. And then we go, I was extremely disappointed for not being able to, I didn't make the qualification for downhill. And then we go into the combined event, and I was by far the favorite because Michaela, Wendy, the other very strong slalom skiers weren't skiing very well in the downhill trainings. But then I did a huge mistake, and Michaela skied very well, Wendy skied well, and everything changed after the downhill. And I was like, that's why it's so hard to defend your Olympic title. One turn, one little mistake, and you're so far off. And then I just did everything I could to get ready for the slalom. It was a huge hurry because usually after downhill, you just run around to get your slalom skis ready, and you change and you run to the slalom hill. And I did two warm-up runs. I inspected, and then I knew, okay, now if I want to get out of my boots and really warm everything up, because it was pretty cold and I couldn't really feel my feet and toes anymore, I knew I had to really hurry. But I got everything done, and then I skied the best slalom course of my life.
That was some good slalom. That was some good slalom. And incredible moment to back it up. From Beijing, I'd like to take it from here, if you don't mind, because I'd like to get into the thick of it. I was talking about you the other day. I hope you don't mind. I was saying nice things. They were talking about, absolutely, I was. They were talking about how results-wise you were struggling this year, and they had some theories of it. And I said, there's a bunch of factors. One of them being, I got to think that after the Olympics, there's always, winning the Olympics, there's always an emotional let down or decompress needed to do it twice, even more so. Before we get into this season, can you talk about the differences after your first Olympic gold medal and after this gold, like how you dealt with it, what the pressures were like, what the media obligations were like? I got to think it took you to a new stratosphere in Europe.
Yes and no. It wasn't much more than it has been, but the last 2 years were extraordinary for me. In any case, I was skiing almost every race in both seasons. I was skiing extremely well in the overall World Cup, so I had much more stuff to do all day long besides skiing almost every event, you know. And after the Olympics, I still wasn't fine, you know. I realize now that I'm only really fine since maybe November, because I was still sick. I was still very much held in the claws of mono, which was extremely hard. And it was also extremely hard to realize, because it got much better every day. But if you start at rock bottom, even much better is not far away from fine, you know. And I absolutely agree with you that this time I was emotionally more exhausted, and my motivation was hard to find after defending my title and winning a medal in another event than the combined, because combined always has this negative comments around it, which I think is pretty stupid, to be honest, because it's the hardest, and that's why it's so few that do it, because you have five athletes that can be on top in downhill and in slalom, or let's say slalom and super G, and that's why nobody else does. Like, people don't want to do it anymore, because you look bad, even though it's so nice to show people what the differences are. I mean, those are the best skiers in the world in one discipline, and they look,
struggle.
They look, you can see the struggle is real if they're doing the other event. So that was always so nice for people to see. I think it was also, it was crazy, but it was also nice to see the Wengen slalom that last week, where you just saw it's so hard, you know. And those are, the level in slalom with the men's is just overwhelming. The last 2-3 years, I think there are 20 guys that can easily win, all of them, if they have the right day. And it was just so hard to watch. And where I'm coming from, the combined is extremely, it's criticized, but it's so difficult. So I really like it, but still it was a huge thing for me to win a medal in another event too, because I want to be an all-rounder, and even though combined is the thing of the all-rounders, it's also very nice to have a medal in super G. And with a season that I skied with my head all year long, I think every result that I achieved last season was just by mental strength, and putting that all in and putting all my energy in. And it was such a hard season, because I couldn't do anything besides racing. I was stuck in my room all day long, crocheting little animals, because everything else was too intense and was taking too much energy. So I sometimes did a little bit of Pilates, and sometimes I went for a little bit of cross-country skiing, but everything was, I was so absorbed from everybody. And I struggled a lot with noises, different noises. So I couldn't really deal with many people around. And I was just in my room, actually. And yeah, sleeping a lot and just absorbed. Nice. So, and I'm a very social person, as you can hear. Mm-hmm. I love.
I was gonna say that seems particularly tough for you.
Yeah, it was horrible, and that took a toll, especially if then I had to put more than one every single percent that I had mentally into every race. And I think I had to, it took me a while to really recover from last year, partly because of all of this and partly because the illness wasn't over, even though it was also hard for me to speak about it, because I didn't want to act like a baby or show too much of yeah. how hard it was, because I think it's not me, even though I really appreciate athletes speaking about hardships, I prefer to keep it in my room.
Private. I appreciate that, and thank you for giving more context of what you're going through, and it makes the exhaustion after the end of the season, like you said, even more dramatic than it normally is. You talked a lot about your motivation. Are you ready? We're gonna get into the good stuff now. When we talk about this season, by your own fault, the expectations are a lot higher, perhaps than what you're pinging at. There's been a couple good runs. There's some momentum coming. There was six the other day that could have been a third or a second bar, one turn or something like that. And there's a fourth. But you've had some days that are rough. Yep. I'm just being honest. Here's my theory, and we'll start with that. And you tell me where I'm wrong. I think just the like we talked about the last Olympic cycle and last year has got to bring your energy down. The fact that you're training all events and you race every event is incredibly taxing. And one of the big ones, I think, is, and I'll let you talk about it as you wish, you switch ski brands. And I think we don't appreciate how hard it is to switch brands and how many steps sometimes we have to take back because we believe we can make a few steps forward. I think the combination of those three things made it challenging for you to get the ball rolling, and you're getting the ball rolling now. How is that for an assessment?
Yeah, I think it's pretty close to reality. It's extremely difficult to switch your ski brand if you're skiing all the events. I think that makes it much harder, mm-hmm. but we would have been pretty ready. But I had an inflammation in my foot. It started 9 days before Levy, or let's say 10 days before Levy. And it hurt. It hurt a lot. And
like a bone spur or?
Yeah, it was extremely weird. But I think because my feet are very long, they are huge. I have really long feet, but they are very narrow. So I have a shoe size that is two sizes too small for my right foot, which is even longer than my left foot. And I'm on the edge. So it's really on the edge of being not possible. And there was something wrong that day. I don't know, maybe we have a theory now that one piece of the inliner got stuck and kind of pushed down on my toes in front, but the toes were already pushed or squeezed together. Like the length of my foot was so squeezed, and then you have something from top pushing on it. So it just got inflamed, and I had cramps that day, and I went out and in again, but somehow it was too late already. And I skied for 4 or 5 days in Levy training like that. But we realized that's not a solution. If I go ahead like that after Lake Louise, I'll have to end my season, because with pain like that in your feet, you have no chance to ski all events throughout the whole year. And me having no breaks and not many days off throughout the year, always being in that ski boot would have caused pretty big problems. So we thought about our problem solvers, and there was actually just one real thing we could do, which was changing the size of my boot, which is pretty insane to do. There it was, 7 days, 8 days before the first race of the season. And just knowing that after that, we don't have a lot of training left. We'll just go ahead and go, because we go to, after Levy, you fly to Killington. From Killington, we flew to Lake Louise. We came back. So it was just no more training days. And we knew that, but still we realized we have no other option. And there's such a thing with changing your boot size. Where do you go? Do you go back? Do you go to the front? Like, do you take the same stiffness of the boot? Do you ski at the same angle? And those are all the things.
From scratch.
Yeah, we started from scratch. All the things we tested in summer training in Ushuaia, in South America, where we tried this stuff, you know, we tried going a little back, a little forward on the ski with the binding. We tried a harder boot. We tried different angles to the front, but also different canting options, a little more aggressive, a little less. And then we just had to try with the same fitting, but for a boot that's one size bigger. And it changes a lot. I would have not, well, I knew it, but it's still it's mind-blowing how much changes if you just have one size bigger. And that's where the struggle started. And I think from there I wouldn't have been that far, but Levy was pretty good actually. I was skiing very well, and then I crashed in the first race, and I have no result. I wanted to absolutely force a good result the day after. I had a huge, from the crash, my whole leg was just swelling up. So it was tough to race the day after that, but still a 16th place would have been good. But with the expectations from the last years, it was pretty bad. And I was just, I think, 1 or 2 tenths off from top 10. So yeah, it was always kind of, it was difficult to start. And then Killington, we had huge problems, but it wasn't just me. It was different athletes skiing the same material. So except for Marta skiing extremely well, but everything else was struggling a bit. And then Lake Louise, we found out about these things, you know, we had the same boot and we realized, okay, we have to go softer with the plastic. We have to change the angle. And from there we went to Sestriere and I got extremely sick. That was crazy. I really had no energy whatsoever. My technician too. We were a pretty bad looking couple those 2 days. Just
hanging on for dear life.
Yeah, it was crazy for 2 days, complete knockout. And I always thought, yeah, I'll just be okay, you know, with the adrenaline and warming up, you'll usually be okay for one run. I had no chance. I was shivering at the start. I thought, okay, what is this? But then thankfully after 2 days it was over again. Unfortunately, those 2 days were the 2 race days in Sestriere, which were pretty hard. It was very long, it was very dark, and it was very shaky. So
you seem to do an incredible job of, like, the way you're talking about it, you seem okay about it now. When I saw you in Killington, when I saw your face when you came through the finish line, you were pretty pissed. You were pretty frustrated.
Absolutely, yeah. That's true.
Do you feel that you're past that now and you feel a lot more confident in your equipment? You think that solves, you know, barring you've had your ass kicked from sickness to a few other with the foot and a few other ways. You've had some bad luck this year. Again, a turn here, there, a crash here, you know, you're beat up the next day, all this stuff. Do you feel that aside from all that, that you're finally getting the equipment piece settled and you're comfortable and confident that you can start pushing limits with it?
Yeah, I think so, because that's maybe also why I have the need to talk about all that stuff, because the more we discuss it and the more we speak about it, I realize more and more stuff. It's also in the moment, I didn't know what was the problem. And I was extremely frustrated with my skiing because I knew I was skiing very well right before Sölden. I was skiing very well before Levi. I was skiing very well in slalom and GS. I was skiing very well in spring with the Salomon equipment. And I was just frustrated with myself and for not being able to find the right way to ski my skis, because in this year, I feel like I didn't ski them. I didn't bend my skis the right way. So everybody was always like, yeah, the skis don't help you, but I didn't help them either. And if from the skis perspective, if I don't start to bend it, I absolutely get why he doesn't want to help me. He's like, I thought of my ski telling me like, what are you doing?
This is not what we talked about.
exactly. So if you don't want to bend me into the turn, why should I do any turns? And I'm realizing more and more stuff. I'm getting more comfortable. It was very frustrating. Like this was just the kind of a snowball effect. That's why I tried to explain what happened in the beginning of the season. That kind of made everything came together somehow, you know, with this little thing. It was all just little things. The sickness was nothing bad. It was just for 2 days really sick. And then the little thing with the foot, it nothing was really bad, but it just got mixed up. And then Killington were extreme conditions that weren't used to that. And that, you know, all these little things coming together and the crash in Levi taking out the confidence of training, or, you know, it could have
always something.
If I don't crash, maybe, if I wouldn't have crashed, maybe I take a lot of confidence from that. And I don't want to say bad luck or whatever, because I was extremely lucky other times throughout my career. It's just how it went. And I can see how it evolved, you know, it could have always went a different way, but that's sometimes how skiers' life is. That's absolutely how life works. Sometimes it goes that way and you just have to deal with your cards and do best out of it and learn the most out of it. So I feel like we learned very, very much. And it was an extremely interesting phase of my career, actually, in the last couple of weeks and months. And right now I'm very excited to be back on long skis. I felt extremely comfortable in Sankt Anton on Super G, in the Super G. And it also, when I watched the race afterwards, it looked extremely comfortable. So that gives me a huge confidence.
You looked like you were having fun for the first time in a while.
speed was always fun. Speed works extremely well. We found the right thing. I think the bigger boot actually helps me in speed, because I'm not that squeezed in anymore as I was used to be. And in slalom and GS, it feels different and I have to learn to deal with it.
Alpine skiing coaches know that video analysis is one of the most effective tools to improve athlete performance. But imagine, what if we could make video analysis simpler and even more effective? ProTurn.io empowers you to take your video analysis to the next level by overlaying speed, acceleration, and turn data directly into your videos. This enhanced video analysis helps athletes of all levels dig deeper. With speed and acceleration right on the video, athletes can gain a more detailed understanding of the direct impact of their tactics and technique. With ProTurn, video review sessions become more concrete and easier to understand. Take a closer look at your turns and start elevating your training. Visit proturn.io/thenextturn to get 10% off your ProTurn starter pack. ProTurn.io. Train smarter, improve faster. And now back to our conversation with Michelle Jazine on The Next Turn.
I don't think that people appreciate how hard it is to have a bit of a funk in your season and to do it not only with your own expectations, but the expectations of a country. There's Swiss pressure. Like, my German's not that great, but reading headlines, it can be pretty tough. I am relieved that neither you or I or one of the Austrian girls right now. I think they're getting, like, that is rough and tumble, the stuff that is being said. How do you, when you see some nasty headlines, Are you able to separate that and just stay focused, or does it actually build up? Because if there's anything I feel sorry for you about, that is something I feel sorry for.
Well, to be honest, there is some stuff that absolutely has the potential to trigger me, but I blocked out a lot when I was really feeling bad, because in between Semmering, after Semmering slalom and until Kranjska Gora, let's say, yeah, these couple days around New Year's Eve, I wasn't in a really good shape mentally, because I was just so frustrated. I couldn't believe it. I was sure I can turn it around, but obviously I couldn't. And I didn't really have any solutions anymore. And I was extremely disappointed with my skiing. And it felt like nobody really has the right tools to help me in that moment. Not my mental coach or my coaches. Everybody was trying hard, but I couldn't really get out of the wheel of negativity. But yeah, that's something that sometimes can happen, and I learned to deal with that extremely well last year throughout the mono illness, as I had these times where things were just tumbling around me, as it felt. And I kind of had to block it all out from media, from social media, from wherever. And now I can actually laugh about some stuff, because it's so far from reality that it kind of makes me laugh. But something that really triggers me is when people are, or yeah, now I can laugh a bit more about it, but it still makes me, it just pisses me off if people are like, yeah, you just changed for the money, and why did you do this, and it's all for the money, and you just have some whatever $1,000 more, and that's so stupid. And I'm like, you really don't know me at all. So I would have never, it's just ridiculous for me to think about making a very career changing decision based on money. Mm-hmm. Because I am extremely privileged. I'm extremely happy with whatever I could do in the last couple of years. And to have the huge chance and privilege to earn money by doing what I love most is way more than enough for me. So I would have never done something like that. And it's kind of weird, you know, like that's the first thing that comes to people's mind. So it kind of gets me pissed that they don't, and it's usually people that don't really understand a lot from skiing, because mm-hmm. there were also comments more or less from the same corner saying, oh, now as we know you're pregnant, we can get why you're skiing more cautious. I'm like, no, it's not me, it's my sister. I'm not a crazy person. I wouldn't ski.
I almost spit out my coffee. I'm like, wait, months? You're pregnant?
No, I'm not. Obviously.
You are not, your sister. Tony, go ahead.
My sister is pregnant and she's 8 months in, and I'm very glad. So everybody's so excited, but imagine, she has a huge belly. You would have seen it if I'm pregnant skiing in a race suit, and it would be completely crazy to ski down these tracks 8 months in pregnancy, you know? So that was also what made me kind of laugh about all of this stuff, because I thought, okay, you guys are not very into skiing.
This may be an odd question, but what advice would you give to probably making history here by us by asking a Swiss to give Austrians advice? But like, my assessment is there's this cloud of negativity that is it, and you can feel momentum actually working backwards with them between athlete and media and coach, athlete media. Is just this,
yeah,
knock on wood, you've never been in that tough of a position, but how do you, I guess the less Austrian question is, how is it that you, when it's loud and noisy and distracting, How do you turn momentum around? How do you stop a ball from rolling downhill and get it moving back the other way?
So I think there's a couple of things. First, I feel extremely sorry for the Austrian girls because some of our really close friends, and I can't believe how media and coaches especially are treating them. So yeah, I don't know. It's extremely hard for me to see, and I see how it affects them and how it gets close to their heart. And I feel extremely sorry for them because they are still some of the very best skiers in the world. You know, they're at the top of their profession, and people don't really lose that. So that's how I see it. And I had something a bit into that direction after Beijing Olympics, where I criticized some decisions, or not really the decision, but communication. But what I think, there are two things. So first is to really get yourself, like, take care of yourself and get out of the negativity and put things back into perspective. It's still just a job, even though it's passion and we put everything into it, and it's so much love and joy for our sport, but still it's actually just our job. But it's very hard because we're always together with the team all day long. You never go home to your family and are like, be like, okay, whatever. So that is the most important thing, and find something that makes you get out of the negativity, get out of just frustration and everything. If it's meditation or a walk in the woods or screaming in your room, whatever, just do it. And the second thing is, I think the best thing is to talk about things, especially in the team. You know, the media, you can block out the media, and you can prepare yourself kind of before the interviews and just block yourself or armor yourself with you put on like an invisible shield, and then you talk to media, and then you get out of it again, and you're like, okay, whatever they say, it doesn't affect me as a person. It's just their critics or expectations for me doing my job, but I know best how I do my job. But the other thing really is to speak about it with in the team, with the coaches, because that's what I think is the hard thing about it. Because the media, you can block media out, but if it's so much negativity in the team, that must be extremely hard, I think. But I just heard stuff. I heard rumors. I never really, I don't know how they deal with the things and how they speak with the coaches and everything, but I heard that there were some critics coming directly from coaches, and that's something through media, you know, which I think is not so cool, not at all.
Thank you for not considering me media and being kind enough to take off your shield. I appreciate that. I appreciate that.
Well, it's different, you know.
Has anybody ever been brave enough to suggest maybe you take a day off, skip a race? Rest a bit.
Nobody would ever dare that. Yeah, of course. Everyone.
How does that conversation go? And what's your thinking methodology? You just seem to go full throttle, like, all the time. What's the thinking right there? Is that just how you're wired?
Well, no, I think on one hand, I really love ski racing. It's the best thing. And I feel extremely bad. And if I'm at home and I watch the others race, it's horrible. Because I should be there. Every single piece of me says, you should be there. Why aren't we there? Why aren't we doing this? It's the best thing we can do in the world right now, and we don't have forever to do that, and let's do it. So that's one part of the truth. The other part is, I always said, you cannot ski Sankt Anton if you ski all the events. It's impossible. No sane person would ski Stanton after 8 races in 15 days, as we had in Semmering, Zagreb. Then one was cancelled, so it was 7 in 15 days. Ooh. And the Kraniska, Gora, and Flachau. So mm-hmm. It's impossible. But then the season started. Look at me. I did it. And after some Moritz, knowing that I skied not so well in tech events until that moment, and seeing my potential in Super G right now, and I think also in downhill, it's pretty big. I realized I have to do Sankt Anton. I really have to do it. And then after Semmering, after Zagreb, when I was in a pretty bad, or after Semmering, let's put it like that, when I was in a pretty not so amazing state, there were different people telling me, or everybody saying, maybe I have to skip some races. But if I skip something, it doesn't really help me. I would have to go training, because if I skip the Zagreb slaloms, I should prepare giant slalom, but then I already prepared the slalom, so it was kind of frustrating to say, okay, I prepared Zagreb, but now I go back to GS. It's like, mm-hmm. What am I doing, you know? And then to skip Kranjska Gora would have meant to skip 2 giant slaloms where I was already on a podium, where I know the course very well. And I thought, okay, maybe I'll find my confidence back. So I just tried to, that was my argumentation. It wasn't perfect, but I knew it will be hard. But if I skip a race, I would be training, and I hate to train when I could race. That's the worst thing for me to do. If I can race, I always want to race. And even if it's in a time that I'm struggling, and even if it's under the eyes of everyone, I prefer to train in the race and find race feeling and everything than to train not in, like, in training somewhere. Mm-hmm. And it's hard that. to do that stuff when everybody's watching.
I don't
watching
think people get how hard it is. Like, I don't think I love 4-event skiers. I think the Alpine combined maybe it isn't set up in the best format, but to me, it's the essence of skiing. Like, it bothers me that it might go away. On that note, why don't you, I'll give you the floor for a minute, and you can make the case for Alpine combined.
Well, I love that. So it's actually easy. It's the original form of skiing. I think the first race ever was an Alpine combined, and it's just the source and the core of everything we do, I think, because Man. Downhill is the way you ski the mountain as fast as you can. You ski the slope. We are in Cortina d'Ampezzo now, so it's one of the most amazing downhill courses, and you really ski the hill as it wants to be skied. You know, you ski down as fast as you can, you go through 2 rocks in Tofana, and it's just so beautiful, and that's what makes downhill so special. And then to switch from that, from 130 kilometers per hour, I don't know how much that is in miles, a lot,
doesn't matter, it's fast.
Yeah, it's put out your head on, if you're on a highway, that's how it feels. Mm-hmm. But imagine you're not having no protection except for a little helmet and a little back protector, and you have to do pretty turny turns still. Yeah. And that this on skis on ice, and then you switch in a couple of hours, in like 3 hours, you have to switch from that mode of skiing, which is the original form of skiing, to very quick turns. You have to be very agile, you have to move very good and quick and well, and still it's also something, slalom is just a discipline. You cannot think. If you think, you're always out of the rhythm, because the moment you think you don't move in the right rhythm anymore. And downhill is something you have to think, you have to be very tactical, but still find the freedom in that. And you have to get very in sync. Your head and your body has to get in sync. And slalom is just instincts, a lot of instincts and quick movements. And you have to find a transition from one thing to the other in a couple of hours. You have to change and eat a little bit something, and or maybe nothing if it's the Olympics and you cannot eat. It's impossible.
It's the triathlon of our sport. It's the triathlon of our sport. We got to find a way to inspire it in future generations, and we got to find a way to inspire it on the World Cup for so many reasons, like you mentioned, and maybe we have to adjust the calendar so more people can train more, but I don't know. I think when there's so many good athletes, I think that's what makes you so good, is that you compete in, like, you could win any event on any day. And so many athletes have to train specifically to in one event. It's like being a long driver. Like, I won the long drive competition or the chip and putt, but can you golf? Exactly.
I think it would be an amazing event, and you have to find some way to make it more attractive to athletes again, because right now with 12 slaloms scheduled, 12 slaloms scheduled with finals and world champs, it's just too much in my opinion. But it's too much in every event, and people are not interested anymore in even more events, unfortunately.
You think the World Cup needs less events?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we lose.
Does it need a longer season? Does it need season with less events?
Yes, I think we really need a longer season. I feel like we're working against climate change. The most important thing to my heart, actually. But I don't know. I feel like we are moving against climate change instead of with it. So that's something I criticize pretty often. But it's a pity that we try to put in. This year was extreme, but that's what future looks like, I think, with the weather we had in the beginning of the season, and so many canceled events, so many events where you knew they were doing everything they could, and they were very non-ecological solutions found to make the races possible, which is absurd if you look at that at our sport, which is so dependent on on a good winter season. And it's a pity.
It's a pity. And I think it also taxes athletes in a way that we don't need to be taxed. I think there's a way that we can promote health and well-being, allow you to train, and allow you to perform at your highest level more often. And I think that would help our sport a lot.
Yeah, and I mean, in a way, also, if we start the season later, people wouldn't need to go, like, everybody's at training in South America or New Zealand, because otherwise it's impossible to be ready in October, because we don't have any options anymore. In Europe, I don't think in the States it's much different. So season comes later and later, and we start to race earlier and earlier. So everybody has to go to the Southern Hemisphere to prepare, which is really bad for the environment again. So it's spiraling, and it's weird. I think it's
can you absurd. Propose a quick solution? Is it just starting later?
I would look at tennis, but I'm a huge tennis fan. I'm
with
tennis.
You with majors. We need four or five major championships. Exactly. We get everybody together. The surfaces are great. Everything's, am I far off?
Exactly. And then I feel like we could go in that direction. We could also say, okay, we have four races in each discipline. That's a grand slam event. But there are different things, but we have to rethink our sport, and we have to rethink our point system, because as it is right now, I don't think it works anymore. And because it cannot be that as a slalom skier, you have such a huge advantage in the overall World Cup. Or if you look at the men's side, it's just, if you're skiing speed and GS, it's you crash everybody else, because slalom is still so intense and you have so many events. Everybody's specialized. That's why it feels like there's almost nobody left skiing extremely well in slalom and GS. It's now it with the men's, it changed a bit because slalom just got more specialized. If you look at the top athletes, I don't know, except for the Norwegians, it feels like it's just pure slalom skiers, and that's also pretty impressive. So I think the Norwegians and Manuel Feller and everybody else is just specialist. Then you have that in slalom, you have that in GS, you have that in speed, and then you can mix up speed and GS a little better. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, because the slalom season is so intense with the men, I feel like they kind of lost the advantage in the overall to the other side, but it's just because there are so many events and I don't know, for me it feels about time very much to change our system.
You feel that Johan Eliasch is the guy to make change? Like, do you feel comfortable with our leadership? Are they listening to athletes? Maybe not is he the guy, but to do it, or is the structure and power sources listening? Do you think they're trying and it's just hard to move?
I don't know. It's hard to tell, of course. If I'm pretty far off, I try to speak to people as much as I can. I thought Eliasch is for sure someone that will bring change, but from the things I've heard or saw, maybe it's a little too much, and it's things to just... it feels like he just wants to do more and more and more. And I thought maybe he will start kind of the revolution that I think we need with, as I said, the point system and everything, because as it is right now, it doesn't feel like a solution forever. But it's interesting.
I'll let that slide. I'll let that slide. That's a good answer. I've got you for a few more minutes, Michelle. Can you look forward to the rest of this season for me? What do you think do you feel like you've already turned the season around? Do you feel like, where's the satisfaction in the season? Where are the markers that you feel you need to hit, either results wise or just process wise and feeling wise?
Well, I think the process, I'm already pretty happy with the process right now, because I feel like I realized a lot of things in slalom, in Flachau, in between runs. Sometimes you just need one good run.
What'd you figure out?
I think it really the thing with the ski, that I'm not helping my ski, so that I figured out already before Kranjska Gora. And then in slalom I just realized, I have to give my skis a little more freedom, because now I want to control everything and they don't work if I'm controlling, and when they don't work I lose faith and I want to control even more, and it was just back and forth
like that.
Yeah, you get it. So it was the reason, and it was a kind of difficult relationship with my ski. So I think that's extremely important, and that I realized that. I really hope I can transfer it into my skiing. I think it worked really well in second run in slalom. I think in GS we figured out a lot. And speed is working great. I feel so comfortable on the skis. I did some mistakes in the downhills until now, in Lake Louise, in St. Moritz. I wasn't skiing perfectly from top to bottom, but I have very fast parts. So I think there we are absolutely ready. I just have to get some more kilometers, some more turns to get used to the skis, because it's a little different. The line where I have to go is a a little different from what I'm used to. I need a little more space to do my turns, to accelerate. So that's the stuff I'm extremely happy with. I feel very comfortable in Super G, as I said. So there I'm happy. I'm excited for this weekend. It's one of my favorite stops. And I'm excited for still more speed skiing after World Champs, because I feel like I just skied slalom at GS until now. So it's nice that we have some more speed. And I'm very happy with my health. So that's something extremely important. Even though people are just looking at results, I'm just glad I can ski all these events, that I can handle it, because last year this would have been far from possible. Also because I'm training a lot on snow besides skiing, as it wasn't working well. You just have to go out and put all your effort in. And this year, it's just insane how much I can do and how much my body handles. It's more than I ever did. And this after the illness from the last 1.5 years. So yeah, I'm very grateful for that. I hope I can keep the energy up, keep the spirit and the motivation high. I think things are turning already. And yeah, I hope I can find more confidence still this weekend in Cortina, and then just, find some, more faithful skiing in GS and slalom in Domplatz and Spindlermühle. And then it's World Champs already, and then we'll see.
Welcome back. Special thanks to Michelle Jacine for an incredible conversation. As always, she's open and honest and vulnerable and incredible. So thank you so much, Michelle. It is now time for our Swix Thoughts of the Day. As always, I'd encourage you to share your Swix Thoughts of the Day with us at thenextturnpodcast.com. But first, it's our turn. Kara, why don't you take first stab at it? What are you thinking? What are your Swix Thoughts of the Day?
Martin, I just loved this interview. Michelle is such an open book and really gave me a sense of what she's been going through. She's experienced a series of bad luck, but what I love about Michelle is that she understands that she has also had incredible good luck and a remarkable career. And she's able to reconcile that there are tough weeks and tough months. And as she says, she's playing with the cards that she's been dealt and has enough experience to realize that this could be a teachable moment for herself, which is just so impressive, especially for an elite athlete who has the weight of a nation on her shoulders. And it really resonated with me when she spoke about the wheel of negativity and how negative press and offside comments and social media can often mess with your head. And it's no wonder celebrities and professional athletes turn off their comments. It must be just incredibly difficult to experience that kind of external negativity when you yourself are dealing with things like illnesses or equipment issues or pain, as Michelle is. And she's right. This is just a job. And if you listen to our World Cup Moms episode, that was one of the major themes of that, teaching your child that they are more than just a sport and this is not their identity. Rather, it's just something that they do. And Michelle, after 10 years in this World Cup circus, has somehow managed to have a positive outlook. And I just loved when she said that after rain, the sun will come out. I just love also seeing Michelle step in any start gate, all four of them that she steps into. Her smile is infectious, and I think she's an incredible all-around athlete.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you very much. Jeff, what are you thinking? What are your Swix thoughts of the day?
Well, you're right, Kara. She has had a remarkable career, and some would say that she's the Iron Man or Iron Woman of our sport. She's been the model of consistency since 2017 with 218 World Cup starts and 19 podiums, 3 Olympic medals, and skiing all disciplines along the way. You know, her passion for ski racing, you know, to me is unparalleled. To hear her say she couldn't sit at home to rest and watch a race on TV without thinking I could have been there. Ironically, she ends up with mono, and perhaps that's her body telling her, hey, it's time to take a rest. And then obviously she's changed to Salomon skis and equipment this year. And she's trying to figure all that out. But there's no question in my mind, it's not going to be long before she's right back on the podium. And Martin, I love the idea. And we've talked about this before a little bit, but the majors in ski racing. And I know we have a couple of them like Kitzbühel and Wengen. But wouldn't that be awesome to have, just like tennis and golf, to have that 4 major championships, maybe perhaps one in North America, I just think it'd be great for fans and athletes and perhaps garner a lot more interest in our great sport. So
we shall see what happens. Jeff, I appreciate that. For me, my six thoughts of the day lie with a few different thoughts. One, how gracious and open and vulnerable Michelle was with us, especially at this period of the season where things aren't going well, and the time she gives and the thought she gives to it is really quite remarkable. I'm taken by how sick she was and for how long. I don't think anybody really got a grip on that until now. And the idea of Kara touched on this, the amount of pressure they must feel and how they deal with it. God, just it's amazing how they turn it around. Super impressed with the amount of ownership she takes in it. She's not blaming equipment. She's not even blaming sickness. She's like, this is what I got to do. And Jeff, to your point of how much she loves racing, the idea that last year when she was struggling with mononucleosis, that what she cut out of her schedule was not races, it was training. She had a full race schedule last year, found a lot of success without any training. That's remarkable. And it tells you how much she just loves the pure joy of getting in the start gate and going. So never count her out. With world championships coming up, as she's sort of figuring this out, don't bet against her. She's always hanging around. She's always going to be there. I can't wait to see what happens next. Those are my Swix thoughts of the day. And again, I'd encourage you all to share your Swix thoughts of the day with us at the Next Turn podcast. But until next week, we'll see you soon here on the Next Turn. Be well.